WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross. Documentary filmmaker Kevin Rafferty captured the feel of the early days of the nuclear era with his 1982 film Atomic Cafe. Since then, he's tackled subjects from the Ku Klux Klan to presidential campaigns. Rafferty's latest documentary tells the story of a football game that's somehow much more than a game. It was the 1968 tilt between Harvard and Yale, a showdown of two undefeated teams played at the end of a tumultuous year that saw the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, and the siege of Chicago at the Democratic Convention. The New York Times' Manola Dargis wrote that Rafferty creates a narrative that pulses with the artful, exciting beats of a thriller. While the political events of the era affected both campuses and add interest to the story, the game itself was a heart-stopping thriller. The far superior Yale team dominated until the game's final moments, when Harvard staged the astonishing comeback that gave the film its title, Harvard Beats Yale 29-29. The story is told entirely through footage of the game and interviews with players from both teams, including actor Tommy Lee Jones, who played tackle for Harvard. Here's the film's opening sequence, with four players describing how the end of the game felt.
You just got the feeling that, the universe had shifted somehow, and that something portentous, significant, weird was taking place.
You just had the sense it wasn't real. It was happening, but yet
almost as if an out-of-body experience, where you're watching things happen and you can't believe that it's happening.
It wasn't painful. It was too strange to be painful.
Kevin Rafferty was a student at Harvard at the time, even though his father and grandfather had played football at Yale. I asked Rafferty to explain the feeling on both campuses as the game approached.
For the first time since 1909, both Yale and Harvard enter their final match against each other, their final game against each other, undefeated. So already there's incredible anticipation of this, the two undefeated teams. Yale had a nationally ranked team. They were number 16th in the country. They were ranked number 5 in total offense per game, 500 yards per game. They had a juggernaut of a team. Harvard had a scrappy little team, a bunch of JV guys, Vietnam vets, thrown together, assembled, people playing new positions, and somehow managed to get through the season undefeated. The week before the game, tickets. A ticket cost $6. People were selling them for $500 a piece in 1968. That's a lot of money in 1968. So why is this game remembered? The game went according to expectations. Yale kind of rolled over Harvard. And near the end of the first half, the score was 22-0, Yale. Harvard coach John Yavison makes a surprise, desperate move, and benches his starting quarterback and puts in an unknown guy, unknown even to many of his teammates, Frank Champy, who leads Harvard down the field, and they score a touchdown just as the half is ending. But in the Yale locker room, at halftime, they're saying, "No, this is no big deal. We don't, we got to go out there in the second half, but the game's over. We're killing them." And as the second half progresses, Harvard scores again, but then Yale scores again, so the score is 29-13. With 3 minutes left. In fact, the score is 29-13 with 42 seconds left. Yale is ahead by 16 points. Anybody who understands the way football is scored knows what that means. You have to score two touchdowns and you have to score two-point conversions. And you have to do it in 42 seconds. Okay, well, the name of the film is Harvard Beats Yale 29-29. So that tells the story of what happened in the last 42 seconds.
And, it was a tie, and yet the remembered phrase is Harvard beats Yale. Where does that come from?
That's a Harvard Crimson headline the following Monday.
That's the student newspaper, right? Yeah.
Yes, that's the student newspaper at Harvard, one of the most famous sports headlines of all time in any league.
And I think to everybody there, it felt like a win for Harvard and a
Absolutely.
Loss for Yale, didn't it? Right.
Oh, totally, yes.
Yeah.
Yaleys will all tell you the same story. They use the word, we lost.
Right. Well, let's talk a little about these two schools. I mean, this is the oldest rivalry in football. But in 1968, they each had their own distinct character. And I thought I would let the film tell us a little bit about what these two are like. And I'm going to play two clips. One begins with a little bit of the game, which, you know, the film interweaves the actual broadcast of the game with interviews with the players. And the first clip I thought I would we would hear is a little bit of the game and then three Harvard players. This is Tommy Lee Jones, who was a tackle, Jim Reynolds, and Frank Champion. Let's listen.
That's John Ballantyne, number 25. Great speed, outside. Going down the sidelines, inside Yale territory to the 38-yard line.
It was the best of times and it was the worst of times. Revolution was in the air. People's lives were changing by the minute. Ideas were flying around like bullets. That's kind of what it was like, yeah.
For me, going through that period of time where you really, on the Harvard campus, you were challenged. To be a moderate was very, very difficult. They were looking to you, your classmates, your friends, your teachers, people from colleges locally were looking for you to, one, take a stand. Where do you stand on these issues?
There was so much going on outside the world of football, especially in Vietnam and the turmoil that was being created, that I found it very uncomfortable to play sort of a sport and take it all that seriously when people were dying. People my age, people I had gone to school with, were serving in Vietnam.
And that's from the film Harvard beats Yale 29-29, directed by my guest Kevin Rafferty. And that's three Harvard players kind of reflecting a bit on the time, 1968, and how it interacted with their lives as players and students. And then I thought this is a cut from the film of three Yale players. This is Kyle Gee, Ted Livingston, and Mike Buscarin.
I mean, Yale is a very insulated place. And, you know, you live in those colleges and you don't have a great deal of contact with the outside world. And Yale was not, you know, a hotbed of liberalism in that time period. And, you know, certainly the Young Americans for Freedom were a more active campus group than, let's say, SDS. And so we were living kind of an oblivious life there and aware of the outside world, but not really tuned into it that much.
You know, one thing you probably wouldn't ask me that I'm not sure is very relevant, but up until that year when I was married, for the previous 3 years at Yale, I was George Bush's roommate. So, you know, my politics are not 100% aligned with his, but he's a very good friend.
Yeah, and I knew George pretty well. We played rugby together, and we were classmates at business school. And, you know, we went to Maine to see his place and to see my place.
And that's from the film Harvard beats Yale 29-29, directed by my guest Kevin Rafferty. Two very different schools in 1968, weren't they?
Yes. Yes, they were different. They were different. I may have overdone it a little bit in my opening montage, but they definitely – and the schools were different, and the makeup of the teams was different also. A lot of the Harvard team were local Massachusetts kids who had gone to local schools within a half an hour of Harvard Stadium.
And a lot of the Yale guys, blue bloods, right? A guy who not only went to George Bush's house in Maine but had one of his own.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's this syndrome of people who are high school football heroes sometimes of – once they get beyond being a celebrity, and particularly if they're a hero in a small town or in a place like where I come from in Texas, they have to enter adult life as just a regular guy, and it's hard on them. I'm wondering to what extent that perhaps is less true of Ivy League students and players. I don't know. To what extent did this game kind of linger in their consciousness and affect their lives?
I think it lingered a lot. I mean, there are a few players who talk about the game as though it had happened, yesterday. And, as you were asking the question, Frank Champy came to mind. And Frank Champy was the shy, introspective, backup Harvard quarterback who was not well known even by his teammates, who came into the game when Harvard was behind 22-0 and replaced the starting quarterback, George Lalich, who had brought them through the undefeated season.
Which shocked everybody at the time, right? Yeah.
It was a bold and shocking move. And he came into the huddle, and he has a thick Boston accent, and his teammates, many of whom, some of whom were from the Midwest, et cetera, couldn't understand what he was saying when he was called the first play.
What did he say to you?
Well, he said 40 oddy waddy on hup, or there are different memories, but it was all along those lines. And what he was supposed to say was 41 on one. But in terms of how it affected people in the rest of their lives, he's the first person that comes to mind, because after the game, he was this guy who came off the bench and was suddenly a hero, an instant legend in Harvard athletics. And at first, he kind of reveled in the adulation, and he and the Yale quarterback Brian Dowling went on the dating game, for instance. Neither one of them got the date, and there were many interviews and whatever. But shortly thereafter, within a few months of the game, he suddenly stopped giving interviews and avoided all publicity. And the reason, he told me, was that he knew that this was going to be the highlight of his athletic career. He was concerned that this would be the highlight of his life. And he didn't want to be remembered as the guy who came off the bench and saved the day. He wanted to have a life. And he described it as, he said, it was as if you're 7 years old and it's a beautiful day and you learn how to ride a bicycle for the first time and your parents love you and it's just wonderful. But then 30 years later, a friend of yours comes up and says, hey, remember that day when you learned to ride the bike? What did it feel like? Wasn't it great? And that's all he wants to talk about. So he made a very conscious effort to move beyond it. In fact, when I called him up to do the interview, he was very reluctant at first. And I had to convince him this was not going to be the Frank Champy story. It was going to be one story about all the players. And he finally agreed to do it.
We're speaking with Kevin Rafferty. His new film is Harvard Beats Yale 29-29, the title of a book that will be coming out by Kevin Rafferty later this year. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with documentary filmmaker Kevin Rafferty. His newest film recounts the remarkable game between Harvard and Yale, two undefeated teams in 1968. The title of the film is Harvard Beats Yale 29-29. He'll also have a book coming out later this year by the same name. You know, when people 40 years later recall an event like this, which, you know, was so dramatic and has been the subject of stories told and told again, memory can play tricks with you. Did you find cases in which people's memories just simply didn't square with the events as you knew them?
Well, there's one case that's in the film where one of the Yale players describes making a tackle on Harvard halfback Ray Hornblower, which caused him to leave the game. And he definitely misremembered that aspect of it. He had tackled him several times earlier in the game, and I'm sure that's what he was remembering. But he didn't. The tackle that caused Hornblower to leave the game wasn't made by this guy, and I showed that in the
right. It's dramatically illustrated in the film. I mean, that particular player, Mike Buscarin, the Yale linebacker, comes across almost as a villain in this film. And I should mention that he is the guy who described how he was friends with George W. Bush, and he would go to Maine and visit the Bush's house, and they would visit his family home. So clearly a guy of some high connections. Talk a little bit about the role he played in the game and the way he talked about it.
Well, he was all over the field. He had a great game. He recovered a fumble for Yale in the first quarter. He's their defensive captain. He's a very intense guy and a very intense football player, and he had a great game, but he fumbled a punt return in the third quarter and then decided he had to make up for it and committed a couple of key penalties in the final 3 minutes of the game. And in one instance, he confessed in the interview that he was trying to injure the Harvard quarterback, Frank Champy, but he got caught for a face mask penalty in the process of doing that, and it was costly for Yale.
he was really candid. I mean, he says maybe we should just listen to a little bit of that.
My intent was to inflict so much damage on him that he wouldn't be able to play the game anymore. So I didn't care if I got a face mask penalty and 15 yards and he can't play anymore. That's a good trade as far as I'm concerned. So I was out for, a hell bent for destruction, and I got what I deserved. Good call.
Were you surprised to hear that kind of confession from him?
I was surprised by the honesty and the soul-searching that accompanied his interview. I was surprised because I didn't know, for instance, that he had done any of the things that he mentioned, because you can't tell from the game film who the penalties are actually called on. So I just said, tell me about the second half. And then these stories started coming out.
You know, I think one of the things that's really effective in the film is, you know, the simplicity of the game and the interviews with the players. And given that there were a lot of other very well-known people who had some connection to the game, not to mention the momentous events of 1968. I mean, you could have used file footage of
tear gas in Harvard Square.
Yeah, and all of that. Sure. And you chose not to. I'm kind of wondering how you decided on the approach you did.
I thought about it. Stock footage of the riots in Cambridge and Harvard Square that year. I thought about it for about 5 minutes, and then I said, no, I don't want to do that. I had an idea for this movie that it would be just the players tell the story. And I stayed with it. There are no coaches are interviewed. No celebrity witnesses to the game like George Pataki or Ted Kennedy, who were both at the game. And, you know, many, many people were at that game, and many, many tens of thousands of other people claim they were at that game. But I wanted to do the story. I wanted the players to tell the story, and only the players. So the politics, their memories of the sexual revolution, their memories of 1968, their memories of what it meant to be on both of these teams all came from within the players. And so I kept it that way. I kept it simple.
Well, Kevin Rafferty, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
Kevin Rafferty's new documentary is called Harvard Beats Yale 29-29.